Jimmy Gerken arrived at Campbell from Little Washington in the mid-1960s, and before he finished, he earned All-American honors and helped establish the Fighting Camels as a national golf powerhouse. Under the direction of Coach Danny Roberts, Jimmy and his teammates established a golf dynasty in Buies Creek, even before Keith Hills Golf Club was built in 1974, and the athletic teams transitioned to the Division I ranks. Jimmy and his teammate Sam Brewer became the first Camels to earn All-America honors in golf in 1969, when the Camels finished fifth in the NAIA National Tournament. Since graduation, Jimmy's worked as a golf professional for more than four decades, making stops in Raleigh, Henderson, and Wilson. My name is Stan Cole, class of 1987, and this is the next installment of Tales from the Creek, where we visit with the people who've made this place special over the years. I'm delighted today to be joined by All-American and Campbell Hall of Fame member Jimmy Gerken. Welcome to Tales from the Creek, Jimmy, and thanks for taking the time to visit with us.
This is an honor for me to be able to do this. I enjoyed my time at Campbell, and if it wasn't for Campbell, I don't know if I'd ever made it.
So, Jimmy, I like to just start at the beginning. Tell us about growing up and where you grew up and how you got started in golf.
Well, my father played golf, and he and three other people actually built Washington Yacht and Country Club. They used to go to Plymouth to play. They got tired of going to Plymouth, and so they went together and formed Washington Yacht and Country Club. And, of course, I started playing when I was about 5 or 6 years old, just piddling along with it. And I got to where I really liked it, and my father would play with me pretty much every day. His group that he played with played at 12 o'clock, and my mother would pick me up at school and take me to the golf course, and they would be waiting for me, and I would play the last nine holes with them every day. And I just got the bug, and it was something that I always wanted to do from day one. Really was not a college person. My mother was a school teacher and insisted that I go, and so I looked around, and Campbell was good, and Coach Roberts was good, and so that's just where I decided to go.
Did you play any other sports, or was it pretty much golf all the way?
I was golf all the way. I had we had a lot of boys that were either you're younger than me or you're older than me that played. We probably had 15 of us. Scott Irby was another one that went to Campbell, and we would meet at the golf course after school or in the summertime about 9 o'clock, and we'd play all day till it was so dark you couldn't see. And we all had a good time. Most of them played other sports except for me and Scott and maybe one or two more, but they played basketball and football and whatever. But I was golf all the way, 100%.
Tell us a little bit about your junior career. When did you first start entering tournaments, and what was that like?
Well, here again, my parents were able to take me to the junior tournaments. I played a lot of junior golf, played in Dunn, Raleigh, Chapel Hill, Greensboro, Raleigh, and Greenville, and just played a lot of junior golf. I tell you, golf was my life there for a long time, played a lot of golf, and as time went on, I continued to play. Never was really what you would say very good. I was okay. I played with a lot of really good golfers, Leonard Thompson that did on the tour, and Jack Lewis, and some of those boys that were the best in North and South Carolina. But I started practicing and playing more and more and more, and I got to where I got halfway decent.
Who were some of your golfing heroes? Was there anybody that you patterned your game after or were inspired by?
No, I didn't ever really take any lessons. We had golf pros there at the club that would help me from time to time. We had one older gentleman, Ben Riley, probably helped me more than anybody. He was an older fella, and he played a lot of golf with me. But as far as, you know, everybody like Jack Nicklaus and Arnold Palmer, and they were the people of my time. And so, you know, you follow them and kind of watch them a lot.
I like to ask my friends in golf, you know, of a certain age. You can't ask some of the younger ones, but it's like, you know, the question, Arnold or Jack, who was the greater? And then everybody seems to have an opinion or a reason.
Well, if I have to pick the greatest golfer, and you might want to throw Tiger Woods in that, but if you want to pick the best golfer, I think Jack Nicklaus was the best golfer that we've ever had, number one. But you can't compare Tiger and Nicklaus because they're playing on different kind of golf courses, different kind of equipment. Technology is much more today than it was then. But you go back and you look at Jack Nicklaus, he won all of the majors he won, but he finished second in 19 of those majors. And he was not playing with the best golf ball. He was playing with a McGregor tourney. Had he been, and a lot of the ones he didn't win, he might have lost by a stroke. Well, if he'd been playing, say, a Titleist golf ball, which was the best ball of the time and probably is today, if he picks up a quarter of a stroke per round, rather than being second in 19 tournaments, he might have been winner of half of those tournaments. So I just got to say that overall, he probably is the best. Tiger did a lot for golf. He made money, the situation that is in golf. Palmer made golf tournaments what they are today. So you've got three different people doing three different things that did a lot for golf along the way. Will we ever have another Tiger Woods or Jack Nicklaus? Probably never. I don't know that the players of today are as good as them, but there's more of them. And so, therefore, your feel is deeper. Used to have Nicklaus and Palmer and Billy Casper. See, Billy Casper probably was one of the best players there's ever been, but nobody gives him, doesn't get a lot of credit because he doesn't care for the publicity.
Right.
But he won the money title many more times than some of the others have. And they were always at the top of the hunt every tournament. But you don't have that today. You have Scheffler's up there and some of the others, but they're not the four or five that are in the winner's position every single tournament like Trevino and Casper and Palmer and Nicklaus were.
Right. You mentioned that you got to be a better golfer. You weren't so good when you started. What are some of the reasons? What are some of the factors where you improve?
You know, you get tired of being beat. And this is crazy, but when I was at Campbell, I hit 1,000 practice balls a day, every day in the summertime. I've hit them so much that my hands were actually so sore that I would have to soak them in salt water at night. And out behind New Dorm is where I hit them. And we, Sammy Brewer and Scott and all of us, that's where we would go to hit a lot of balls. And I was just a person that if I got beat, I got beat that one time. I didn't get beat that second time. I just hit 1,000 balls. I was a really good putter, a really good chipper. The guy Ben Riley, I told you about, he's the one that helped me with my putting more than anything. I putt with the same putter today that I putted with when I was at Campbell. Never putted with a different putter from that putter. I got the same sand wedge today that a boy at Campbell gave me one night. And the sand wedge, believe it or not, it's a first flight sand wedge. Probably nobody has ever heard of it. And I'm going to say that sand wedge is 65 years old. But that's just the way it was. I mean, you know, we practiced all the time, every day, every day.
I'm interested to hear about what your recruiting process was like. Why, you know, Campbell wasn't a golf powerhouse before you arrived. What were some of the factors that led you to Buies Creek for college and athletics?
Well, I knew that I wanted to be golf. And like I said earlier, my mother was a school teacher and I really wasn't interested in school. I looked at Wesleyan, I looked at Appalachian, and, you know, there just wasn't much for golf back in those days as far as scholarships and things like that. And Coach Roberts called me one day and asked me if I would come up to Campbell and take a look. And so we went up there, and I played golf with Benny Dean. I don't know if you know what I'm talking about. He kind of took me out to the golf course. Our two golf courses were Chicora and Sepahal. Sepahal's gone.
Up in Fuquay, right?
That's right. And we, and Coach Roberts was agreeable. Here again, I was a tournament person, and we worked it out with Campbell for me to be able to play all the golf I wanted to play. They even made some arrangements, and I don't know what the deal was, but this was back before Pinehurst came what it is today. But they made arrangements that I could go to Pinehurst, which is not far from Campbell, really, and play golf every single day for free.
Wow.
Now, I don't know what they did. I have no idea. But I was able to go there, and I took somebody with me, and I could go every day and play all the golf I wanted to play at Pinehurst. But back in those days, you go to Pinehurst, there may not be five people there in the summertime in the 60s. So we went a lot.
That's hard to imagine these days with the lodging and the restaurants and rooms and rounds is the theme at Pinehurst now, with 10 courses and they want people booking up that place. It's hard to imagine that that was the case even that long ago. Jimmy, I'm always curious, people have always talked about when I was in school in the 80s, Campbell was removed definitely from the metropolis of Raleigh. You had to go through the country. You felt like there was some separation there. But even more so, what was Buies Creek like in the 1960s? And what were some of the things you did to put a little money in your pocket or to spend some time when you weren't playing golf?
Well, we played my group. We played pretty much every single day. We'd go to Raleigh and play some. My roommate worked at Raleigh, RGA, Raleigh Golf Association, and so we would go up there and play some. And there was a man at Dunn named Crow.
Mm-hmm.
I can't think of it. I think it was Crow Stancil. He liked to gamble a little bit, and we putt on the putting green out under the light at Chicora. They had a light over the putting green, and we'd stay out there and putt a lot at night until it was dark. The school had pretty much closed up, and we'd go to Barefoot's over in on our way back to school. There was a restaurant, Barefoot's, that we would stop by there and eat, supper and all that on our way back to school. But golf was it for us. Now, after I got past, while I was going to Campbell, once I got my driver's license, Scott Irby was from the same town I'm from. And Scott and I played, this is crazy, we played a golf tournament every single weekend, starting in April all the way through September, a golf tournament every weekend somewhere. North Carolina Open, the Carolinas Open, the Carolinas PGA, we played one or two in Virginia. There was two or three in Greenville, Kinston, Raleigh. We played a tournament every single solitary weekend during that period of time, all the way through school.
Well, and that competitive drive, that sense of it had to hone your skills and had to make you even better when you were teeing it up in college competition.
Didn't like to finish second. Just didn't like to finish second. And, I won a lot of them. I won probably 50 invitationals. I finished second in the North Carolina Amateur a couple of times. I was invited to play on the North Carolina team, what they call the Putter Cup, against the boys from Virginia. All of the big players from Virginia were there, and that was probably my best golf played. We played, I can't even think of the name of the golf course, but all of the boys from Virginia that were good players, and I shot the lowest round on the last day, which was the score day. And I shot 69 on this particular golf course, and that was the lowest score shot for the day. And all of the big boys, from Leonard Thompson, Jack Lewis, all of the boys from North Carolina. I was the only one on the North Carolina team that didn't go to Wake Forest.
How about that? Jimmy, in a recent conversation I had with recent Campbell grads and touring pros, Jesper Svensson, who's on the PGA Tour this year, Pontus Nyholm, who's on the Korn Ferry Tour, heading to the PGA Tour next year. Both of those guys mentioned how great it was to have a group of teammates to practice with and to compete against on a daily basis. And that's not the case out on the tour necessarily, especially when you're starting out. You knew so many of your teammates from junior golf. What was it like having that group of guys that y'all had known, and you wanted, you know, you said you didn't like to finish second?
No. Well, we all got along. There was no complaining or fussing. We all knew our positions, and we just kind of got along. We played a lot of tournaments together. Even though Scott and I played three times more than anybody else, mm-hmm. did the rest of them, Sammy and all of that crowd did also. They played a lot of golf with us. But you're talking about the way it is today, the way it was. I'll give you an example. I played in the tournament in Wilmington, the Azalea Open.
Mm-hmm.
Played in it probably two or three years while I was going to Campbell. And so I go down there, and there was a motel there called the Fountain Inn. And all of the tour players stayed in that Fountain Inn. Everybody stayed there. Mm-hmm. Palmer stayed there. All of them stayed there. And every day it was a shack of a motel compared to what it is today. Mm-hmm. All of the players would take a chair out, and it was an overhang, and they would sit in chairs all underneath that thing, 25 or 30 of them, and just talk. You wouldn't have that today. All of them rent houses and, you know, that type of stuff. But there was 25 or 30 of them sitting underneath that overhang in a chair, just talking. And buddies and friends and stuff like that. But today they all rent houses, and it's just different atmosphere
today. And they've got three or four people at least in their entourage, their strength coach, their mental coach, their swing coach, and all those that, you know, it's a different, and you know, the stakes are so high financially. It's kind of hard to imagine. Jimmy, I'm interested, and I always like to know this. So many people have spoken so highly of Danny Roberts. What are some of your best memories of Coach and his family?
Coach Roberts was a great, great person. He was very good to all of us on the golf team. He took care of all of us on the golf team. He was at every single match, every single tournament, every single day of practice. He looked at our schedules to be sure that things were the way they needed to be. He was, and of course, I went to Campbell because of him. He was assistant basketball coach at the time when I was there.
Mm-hmm.
And there was two or three of us. He built a house over near Keith Hills, mm-hmm. and he built two apartments on the house that four of us could stay in. And just as soon as they finished the house, we moved in, and I lived there with him for a couple of years in the house. His family was nice, children, and he was a big influence. And he was one of these people that was able to get the players that we needed to get. Of course, it's kind of like some of the colleges are now. When you win a lot, you don't have quite as much trouble getting the players as you normally would do. And of course, all of us knew the North Carolina players, mm-hmm. and so we were able to get. Scott Irby went to Campbell because of me. He went to Wake Forest to start off with, and he calls me one day and he says, "I don't like it here. How's Campbell?" I said, "Come on."
Mm-hmm.
And the next semester he's there.
And then Sammy Brewer did the same thing. He came from Wake.
Same thing. Yeah, sure did.
I was curious, before we started our interview, you were telling a story related to the old Buies Creek grocery store, and something you and a friend did, and to do this, and again, this is something that puts us in a place in time. But I understand you were rather enterprising when you wanted to put a little extra change in your pocket.
Well, you know, we just didn't have a lot of money, and we were sitting around there in the dorm one night. I lived in Kitchen, and we said, let's go around and collect the bottles. And of course, there was, I don't know how many people, there was three floors, I think, at Campbell at that time. And I don't know, it might have been 100 people in there. I don't know. But it was considered to be the athletic dorm. Mm-hmm. So everybody that played a sport pretty much was there. But we went around and picked up the drink bottles, Coke bottles and whatever, and kept them in our room. And when we got 10 or 12, 15 cases, we carry them to a place behind us that was called Scab Eyes. Mm-hmm. It was a little grocery store. And he'd give us about 2 cents a bottle for the bottles. And so that was our extra spending money that we had to spend. And we did that for a pretty good while until Campbell sent us a letter and told us they were going to kick us out of school if we didn't quit selling their bottles, because I think they considered the bottles to be theirs. So,
you know. About that. Our mutual friend, John Marshall, wanted me to be sure that I asked you about your 1966 Pontiac GTO.
Ooh.
He said you were rather proud of that car, and Roy Lee Matthews there in Buies Creek also had an eye on it as well. Tell us a little bit about your car.
Well, I just enjoyed fast cars. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, back in that day, the 65, 66 GTO was the fastest car you could get. And I bought one, and I bought it in Williamston. The people in Washington wouldn't sell it to me. They sold them, but they wouldn't sell me what I wanted. Mm-hmm. And I had that car for a long time, and it was definitely fast. I did everything I could to make it fast. I raced on the drag strip at Kinston and the one in Fayetteville.
Wow.
Now, it wasn't a super, super humped up car or anything like that, but it was just a standard car. But I did everything I could do physically to make it run a little bit faster. And all of us enjoyed it. John and, you know, all of us at Campbell, Sammy and Julian, Bun, all in. That's what we went to our trips on, was that GTO.
And you got there maybe quicker than you would have been in another.
Maybe so.
Jimmy, you've mentioned Sam and Julian and Scott. How have you stayed in touch with those, your friends from Campbell through the years?
Well, Scott Irby is a member here of my club. Mm-hmm. Now. He came here because of me. He was at Myrtle Beach working for Bank of America, and they were wanted him to transfer. And so he calls me one day, and he had a chance to go to Henderson, and I told him I wouldn't go to Henderson. I was already here. So he said, okay. So about a month or two later, he calls me and he says, how about Wilson? I said, well, I think you'd enjoy Wilson. So Scott came here and I showed him around, and he ended up moving here not too much long later. Now, Julian and I, we kind of a crazy thing. I was doing club repair when I was at Campbell, just on the side peddling. And so when Julian moved in with me, he started doing it with me. And I was a year ahead of him in school, and I got out in front of him, and I went to Henderson. And he calls me, and he wants to do club repair together.
Mm-hmm.
I had just done so much sanding and piddling on golf clubs that I just didn't want to do it anymore.
Right.
It just wasn't going to be for me. So that's kind of how Julian and I, and we've been close. Julian was actually in my wedding. And so I keep up with him because I do a lot of business with Carolina Custom. Sammy was at North Ridge. Sammy was at Raleigh Country Club. And when he left Raleigh Country Club, the people at Raleigh Country Club came to me and wanted me to come to Raleigh Country Club. And I thought about it a lot. I really did. But Henderson came back and made me another offer, so I ended up staying in Henderson. But being that he went over to Northridge, mm-hmm. where he was an assistant for a long time. And I would go there to play with Sammy some at Northridge. So that's kind of we've been able to keep together. I actually had a thing here. I'm planning to do it again before I leave from here. I had a get together for everybody that had ever worked for me and all the boys that I went to Campbell with.
Wow.
I had two or three people help me with it. And so I saw a lot of those that I haven't seen, a lot of the boys that I went to Campbell with that I haven't seen since Campbell. But they all came, and I had them bring their families. This has been, I don't know, maybe 10 or 15 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Bring their families. They went to the pool if they brought children or grandchildren. And we had supper here, and everybody told tales. My wife would tickle me. We would sit there and tell a tale. Julian, for example, mm-hmm. would tell a tale about something that happened. A shot he hit. Golfers are like that. A shot he hit 25 years ago. And she goes, how can you remember one golf shot that you hit 25 years ago? And all golfers, and I'm sure other sports people are the same way, like a football player catching a particular catch. But to remember, I can't even remember the name of the golf courses I play now, but to remember a shot that you've hit 25 years ago, you know. And of course, they'll call me sometimes from time to time, some of them, and I'll see them. So, you know.
I can relate to the remembering a detail from decades ago. I'm 61 years old, and when I was 11 years old, the Baltimore Colts were the most important thing in my life. And I can tell you the starting lineup on both sides of the ball from 1975, but I can't remember sometimes why I walked into a particular room these days. And I think that's just the way the mind works on us a little bit. Jimmy, you said you fell in love with the game early. Did you know that early on? When did you know that you wanted to make golf your career?
I was sitting in the house, in my house growing up with my parents, and I will never forget it. I was sitting in a particular chair that we had right in front of the television. We were watching the television, and somehow or another conversation came up. Now, I'm only, I don't know, maybe 9, 10, 11 years, 12 years old or something like that, and my parents both were sitting there, and I said, the only thing I want to do is be a golf pro. Now, if I had it to do again, I don't know that I would do that. I enjoyed the golf part. I enjoy growing the grass on the golf course. There's not much in the way of tournament golf for golf pros.
Right.
Like there was when we were coming along. We had an invitational playing every single weekend. And they still have a lot of them. They don't have the individual stuff. Most of it is a two-man Super Bowl or something like that. But for a golf pro, if you're a golf pro, you work on Saturdays and Sundays.
Mm-hmm.
And most of the tournaments are on Saturdays and Sundays. And there's just not many tournaments for local pros, so to speak.
Sure.
You got pro-ams and things like that, but it's not like an individual scoring thing that you're playing in. And I just missed amateur golf. And if I had it to do again, I think that's where I would stay. I'd do golf, but I would stay as an amateur and be able to enjoy that part of it.
So a lot of folks, they think, if you're a golf professional, you're out playing a lot or doing this. Are those some of the biggest misconceptions about the job? They don't understand the time commitment and all the other things that go into running the business.
My favorite thing is when you're standing on one side of the counter, it looks different than when you're standing on the back side behind the counter. I've got a great wife. I've been married 56 or 7 years. She's put up with a lot of mess, a lot of golf. She does not play golf, but she's put up with a lot over that period of time. And I've been very blessed to have her. I've got two great children, girls, and five great-grandchildren. None of them play golf. They're all basketball people. But now my one daughter was a pretty decent golfer. She played on the golf team here at on the boys' golf team when she was here because they didn't have girls' golf back then.
Right.
So she played on, and she went to Wilmington, and they tried to get her to play on the girls' golf team at Wilmington, but she didn't have any interest in, and doesn't play any now. I doubt she's played any in 10 years.
I'll be. I'm always curious. You and Paul have been together for years and years. How did y'all meet?
We're both from Little Washington.
Okay. Yeah. So have y'all been together high school sweethearts, or what was that? What was this?
Well, I'm 4 years older than
okay.
her. So she was still in high school when I was at Campbell. I was a freshman at Campbell when we met, and a friend of ours got us together. Mm-hmm. And that's how we ended up like that.
Awesome.
And we dated for about four years before we got married.
Well, I'll be. In the 70s, and you moved to Henderson Country Club and met a high school golfer by the name of John Marshall. John's been a guest on the Tales from the Creek podcast and has shared a little bit about y'all's relationship. I'm interested to see your memories of John back then. And did you have anything to do with him, the fact that he ended up at Campbell to play golf?
Yeah, John was eager person to play golf. He played a lot. He worked on his game a whole lot. We played a lot of golf together. Far as going to Campbell, we talked about going to Campbell, and I think he selected Campbell maybe for the same reason I did. His family was a nice family. He has a brother that was a great boy that he worked for me for years as my cart boy. I haven't seen him in a long time. I see John every once in a while. Mm-hmm. When I go to Kinston, I've seen him out at the golf course. But, he worked on his game and really played a whole lot. He was dedicated to play golf. He didn't play any other sports, and golf was his thing.
Jimmy, you've made a career in this business. What has kept you coming back year after year for this rather than moving into a different professional field?
I just like golf. I tell people all the time, even the kids, golf is a thing. You meet a lot of great people playing golf. There's not a lot of, not to say there isn't some, but there's not a lot of drugs, and there's not a lot of drunks, and there's not a lot of problems that you have in golf. You get to go, if you're lucky, you get to go to some of the greatest places in the world, and you get to see some of the greatest, most beautiful areas, scenic golf courses. It's just really, really nice. And being a golf pro, I get to play all of them for free. So it doesn't cost me anything. I talked to a fellow, a friend of mine yesterday, and she was talking about going to Pinehurst and playing golf with her son in Pinehurst at the Country Club in North Carolina. The greens fee was $150.
Right.
I can go there and play for free. Now, if you play with me, it might cost you $150, but I can play there for free. But, you know, it's really, I tell people, I'm a workaholic.
Mm-hmm.
That's why my wife is so, I'm so blessed to have her. She's put up with it. I get up every single morning for 65 years and come to work, and I don't dread it. I don't hate it. I don't mind it at all. I really, you know, like the country club golf atmosphere. It was quite a change for me from Henderson. When I was in Henderson, we had 440 members and not a lot of golf. It was a high-dollar club, and everybody up there was great. They gave me an opportunity to learn the food part. I went there as the golf pro to start off with, and then after about 2 or 3 years, they had some superintendent problems, so they asked me if I would have any interest. I didn't know anything more about growing grass than this microphone knows. And I did it for 10 or 15 years. Then after a few years, we'd had three or four managers and had worked out. So then they came to me and asked me if I had an interest in being the manager. I didn't know anything more about food other than eating it. And so I did that the last 7 or 8 years I was there. Well, by being able to do that, when I came here to Willow Springs, it was Crip.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'd done the golf course, I'd done the food, and my wife ran the dining room for us, and she looked after the food, and we had great weddings, and we've served as many as 400 people at one time here. And this is an old golf course built in, the clubhouse was built in 1850, and the golf course was started in 1915. The North Carolina Amateur was first started here. They had a tournament here. They called it the Wilson County Invitational, and all of the great players of North Carolina, Billy Joe Patton, and all of the people that could play a lick came here to play in that golf tournament. And then the Carolinas Golf Association came to them in 1974 and said, we would like to take that tournament over. And no, not 74, 64. Mm-hmm. There's a sign out front that has that on there. And they took it over at that time, and it became the North Carolina Amateur.
I'll be. You purchased Willow Springs in 1989 and have run it ever since. What are some of the best things about being the owner-operator, and what are some of the drawbacks?
You can't be fired. Nobody can fire you. You know, it's been a great pleasure and a great thing to do. It's different. Henderson was more of a membership club. We didn't have any public play to amount to anything. Here we have right much public play. So it's been a little bit different far as that aspect of it goes. We've got a lot of great members. I've never had any trouble with anybody. It's been a good journey for us. And we're getting ready to move on. We've sold Willow Springs. We'll no longer be a golf course after this. They're going to put about 300 houses out here. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I hate to see it happen. It's been harder on the members maybe than it has been me, because Happy Valley, the other golf course, closed probably about 10 or 12 years ago.
Right.
We've got a public golf course here that there's so much play on it that you can't hardly get on it.
Right.
And then Wilson Country Club was bought by McConnell Group, and it's pretty tough to get on Wilson Country Club.
Right.
So it's been a little bit hard for them. They're having to drive 25 miles to play. A lot of them are going to the Cardinal over in the other side of Kenley, but It's just the way it is. I can't help them any. Try to, but I just can't do it.
Our guest today on Tales from the Creek is Campbell Hall of Fame member and All-America golfer Jimmy Gerken. Jimmy, you've seen so many changes in the game over the last decades, from ball to club technology. In what ways has the game changed the most, in your opinion?
I think the ball has changed the game more than anything else. I think if you were to take a modern-day club and then take the old club, the wood club, fix them up the same loft, same shaft, put them on a hitting machine and have them hit the ball, I think that there wouldn't be hardly any difference in distance. But the ball is just out of sight. Everybody wants their ball to go the furthest, their club to go the furthest, and so therefore it just hasn't been controlled the way it needs to be controlled. Now, I understand they're going to cut the ball back 10%, but I don't think that's much. Might be 3 or 4 or 5, maybe 10 yards at the most. And those players, those tour players that hit a long ways, they're going to figure out something to get that extra 10 yards that they need. I would rather see the golf courses in a little bit more difficult, and I'd rather see risk reward a little bit more. I don't know how to go about it. I hear people say, well, from 150 yards in, they ought to let the rough grow to a foot. I don't know about that. But, you know, I don't know how they're going to be able to correct it. You look at the overall picture from my standpoint. When they're building, they're going to have golf courses 9,000 yards long before too long. And won't nobody play them but the pros. But you think about the maintenance from a 6,500-yard golf course to a 9,000-yard golf course, how much more it costs to cut the grass and whatever. You take like Myrtle Beach, they'll build a 7,100-yard golf course, and I bet you in a year they don't have 100 people play it. Because if I go to Myrtle Beach, even back in my day, I'd play with my group, and my group is going to play the upper tees or, you know, the regular tees. So they're maintaining that part and looking after it for 100 people.
Sure.
And the expense is quite a bit.
Absolutely. A lot of changes over the decades. How are the ways that the game is still the same?
I don't know that it is, if you want to really talk about it. You talk about back in the day of Palmer and Nicklaus and all them, the golf courses are not near the same. The conditions are better. The grass is better. The greens are better. I mean, it's just so much different than it is today. You know, back when I first started monkeying with the grass, we had a crabgrass problem. And John Marshall and all the boys, the kids at the club, we'd have what I call Crow Day. And on Crow Day, I would get all, and this would start about like in July. We didn't have chemicals to keep the crab and the crow out of the greens.
Right.
So I'd get all the boys, there'd be about 10 or 12 of them, and line them up across the greens, give them a steak knife, and we'd walk across the green cutting crow foot out. Every week, all through from about the 1st of July to the middle of August, they went back to school, we'd have Crow Day. And we'd all go across the green. Boy that runs half of the U.S. Opens worked for me. Name is Reggie Jones.
Mm-hmm.
Great, great kid. Great kid. And he's in charge of everything but the tournament itself. He doesn't have anything to do with the tournament. He does food. He does transportation. He does everything. Everything. And he lives in Pinehurst. And he comes to see me about once or twice a year. He was at the U.S. Open, the last one that they played. He calls me and he says, look, I'm coming to Raleigh-Durham, flying to Raleigh-Durham. I'm going to get a car and come see you. He comes see me. We go to Parker's and eat lunch. You know, you just don't ever know what's going to happen. But, you know, golf is just that way.
So I can imagine if you're walking across a green with a steak knife, that's that in July and August, that's probably not your favorite responsibility that you do with that job. But I guess it does teach you a little bit about work ethic and things that have to be done.
Well, the hot dog that they got when they got through was the intriguing thing. Hot dog and a pack of nabs and a bag of potato chips. And, of course, most of these kids were 13, 12, 13, 14. And Reggie will tell you the same thing. All of them remember Crow Day.
Jimmy, I understand you're a collector of vintage golf clubs. Tell us a little bit about your collection. Do you have a couple that you're really, really proud of?
Well, there was a fellow named Rocky Winstead that lives down here in Bailey, older man, and he was in charge of Virginia's correctional prison boxing deal. And I was in Henderson one day and he just showed up. I didn't know him. He had some kin folks. And he says, I want to start collecting clubs. And I had a barrel that I put lost and found in. And he took every one of those clubs and that started him. Mm-hmm. Well, over the years, I've picked up clubs. I was a cash-in putter person.
Mm-hmm.
I probably got 25 or 30 of them today. Stainless steels, old ones. I mean, I've got a bunch of them. Had some drivers, some old McGregor drivers. And I was a person that played with VIP Jack Nicklaus clubs all through my career. through Campbell and up until I came here, really. And I had 9 sets of them. I bought Sammy's Brewer had a set, and I bought his from him. Luke Veazey in Durham used to have a bunch of them at Hillendale, and I'd go over there and get them. And you could buy that club brand new for $175. And I had a whole bunch of them. I was a big McGregor person, and McGregor salesman came in one day, and he said, "I've got a Jack Nicklaus set that I've got 1,000 sets that I can sell that are made by him or designed by him. Would you like a set of them?" And I said, "Yeah, I'll take a set of them." They were $1,000 a set for just the irons. Now, and this was back when I was in Henderson, so it's been 50 years ago. Well, I took them. They had the leather grip on them, which he was. I had the one iron, which he was a one iron person. Through the sand wedge, the whole bit, they came in a nice wood box. Well, my set was $789 of 1,000. So about a year later, the McGregor man comes back and he says, "I've got the woods to match. Would you like to have the woods?" 1, 3, 4, 5. That was what clubs were pretty much then. But they were going to have 2,000 of those. I said, "Well, if you can get me set 79 of 2,000, I'll take a set." Because I still had mine. Now, Richard Lee, friend of mine, he bought them all up that he could get and sold them to the Japanese. The Japanese would buy ping golf clubs, anything like that. And he sold them all. Well, he called me about mine, and I said, "I don't want to sell mine. I'm going to hang on to them." So when I got that, I had 79 of 1,000, 79 of 2,000. I hung on to them for a long time, and the woods were $1,000. So I had $2,000 in the clubs, and I hung on to them for a long time. And this guy, Rocky Winston, I'm telling you about, he called me and he said, "You still got those clubs?" And I said, "Yeah." He says, "I want them. I don't care what the price is, I want them. I've got them sold." So he bought them and he sold them overseas to the Japanese. But I would say that the Nicklaus clubs, that's what I play with. I think that's one of the best clubs that's been made. I'm playing with a club today that's pretty similar to that club. I can't play a lick anymore, but I stick them in my bag and look at them.
Jimmy, you were inducted into the Campbell Athletics Hall of Fame. That's an honor you share with Sam Brewer, Jim Bromley, Jay Overton from those great NAIA golf days. What does that honor mean to you?
Oh, man, you just don't get that every day. Campbell Golf meant a lot to me. We talk about Campbell and the Campbell Golf team and the people that played on it. You know, Jay Overton, he was not on my golf team, but I know him from playing golf around. I joke with my daughter. My granddaughter goes down to the basketball camp, and I told her, I said, "Walk in that front door and walk straight to that wall back there, and at head high, there's a little plaque up there on that wall." So, you know, and you'd be amazed at the people that I know that will say, "Well, I'm going to Campbell," and I'll tell them that. I said, "Walk in that front door and walk right straight to that back wall, head high.
Yeah,
there's a plaque up there." You know, and I've got a thing in the pro shop in there that where we, the induction into the Hall of Fame and the national tournament that we played in, where Sammy and I both made the All-American team. Yeah.
You, Sam, Julian, Scott, so many others paved the way for a Campbell golf program that now has produced dozens of NCAA postseason trips, conference titles, multiple PGA touring pros. What's it like to know that you and Coach Roberts and your teammates laid the foundation for what has really become a mid-major powerhouse in golf?
When I first was contacted by Coach Roberts, they had had a pretty good year the year before. I don't know about previous year, but most everybody that was on the golf team before I got there, the year before I got there, had graduated. There wasn't hardly anybody. So we were all pretty much fresh, new people. But I would say that Campbell Golf started when we started in 66, I believe it was. That's when Campbell Golf started, really started. And Campbell was good to us, good to all of us. They helped us out and worked with us on the tournaments and, you know, let us play a lot of golf and do a lot. And there was a lot of recognition. In D. Rich, they had a, you know, thing at, and that you went to every day, chapel. And they would recognize the things that the golf team had done. They won the conference championship two or three times. And, of course, when I went there, we were an independent and we were not in any kind of a conference at all. I know we'll forget, old Coach Roberts came to me and he said, now we're getting ready to move up. We're going to go in the NAIA. He said, I just want to let you know, grades are counting now. So, you know, we had to. All of us had to be sure that we did well enough to stay eligible, because school was not our big suit. We were all golf people, you know.
I always like to ask my friends in golf a few questions and kind of a short answer thing. Who makes up your ideal foursome?
You're talking about with the big boys.
If you could play with anybody living or not, and we can make it, you can do four and we can add you in as the fifth if we need to do that as well.
I really don't know. Of course, everybody would like to play, with Arnold Palmer, and Jack Nicklaus and those people. I had an opportunity to, really meet Jack Nicklaus. They were talking about having the L&M match play tournament, which they ended up having at McGregor Downs at Raleigh.
Right.
They were talking about having it at Crowsdale in Durham.
Mm-hmm.
And a real close friend of mine, Lee Couch, whose father put Mike Suchak on the tour and Tommy Bolt on the tour. Lee and I were really, really good friends. In fact, Lee was going to be my partner here at Campbell. He's a year or two older than me. And he calls me one day and he says, look, Jack Nicklaus is coming up here to play a practice round at Crowsdale to see if Crowsdale would be a site for this L&M match play tournament. He says, you need to come on up here. Well, I go up there and there's only probably, it wasn't advertised or anything like that. There's probably only 25 or 30 people out there watching them play, and you could walk along and talk to him.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm a nobody, and here I am walking along beside Jack Nicklaus, and I'd ask him something about a golf swing, and he'd answer me. It was really, you know, exciting to be able to see that. And here again, you go to a golf tournament, and he's playing. I took my daughter to the Masters tournament one time, and it was absolutely about impossible. But here I am walking down the fairway talking to him like I'm talking to you. I say, so what do you think about when you get to the top of your swing, or what do you do? And he'd explain it, you know. So I reckon if I had, I'm kind of like everybody else, I'd like to be Palmer and Nicklaus, Julius Boris maybe, some of the older players of the time. And I've played with some of them, playing in the tournament at Wilmington, at the Azalea Festival tournament. I played in that about three or four times. And, you know, I played with some of those people.
What's the most difficult course you've played?
We played the North Carolina Open at in, you know, you get old, you can't remember everything. They had the PGA and Trevino won it in Winston-Salem.
Was that at Tanglewood?
Tanglewood.
Mm-hmm.
And I've always thought that was the hardest golf course. Now, you got to remember they were about a month, maybe a month and a half before the tournament itself. Mm-hmm. So it was getting ready. It wasn't 100% ready. And we had a pro-am at Alamance Country Club in Burlington, a two-day tournament. And I shot 64-65. Now, it's a Donald Ross, and it's not what you'd say a really difficult, long golf course, but it's a great golf course. Really enjoyed playing there. And somebody said something to me, "Boy, you better enjoy it because next week the North Carolina Open was at that golf course." He said, "You won't never see that there." Well, I go over there, and the first hole is a little down the hill. Mm-hmm. Have you ever played there?
I have not.
Well, it's a down the hill, short, 300-yard hole, a nothing hole. And I hit a 3-iron off the tee, laying down to the bottom, knock it on the green, go to the next hole, and it says on the roster, I'm playing the pro-am now,
mm-hmm.
it says a roster up there, a sign that says par 5. So I hit two pretty good shots, and I'm down in front of the green, and I chip it up, and I make a 5. And the guy says, that's not bad, that's a bogey. And I said, "Well, the sign back there said it's a par 5. He said, "No, it's par 4 for you." Great day. That thing was over 500 yards, first 500-yard hole. Then the next hole was a par 3 over water, about 230 yards. And so I shoot 74. Par was 70. It was a 7,000-yard golf course, which was long back in those days. Mm-hmm. Well, that 74 was low for the day.
How about that?
And, you know, Trevino and those boys, that's what the one he won that tournament there. Mm-hmm. But I always thought it was, of course, the rough was very deep, very hard. If you got in the rough, about all I could do was hit a wedge back on the fairway. But I thought that, and I've always felt like that at that day was the hardest golf course that I'd ever played.
How about, do you have a favorite golf course?
Mid Pines. Donald Ross again, it's not a long golf course, but I'm going to tell you what, it's a hard golf course. Very difficult. Greens are so hard.
Is there a course that you haven't played that you would like to play someday? A bucket list course?
Well, you know, I'm kind of like everybody else. I'd like to play Pebble Beach. I can't think of any in this area that I haven't played that I would like to play. I had a member in Henderson growing up. I mean, when I was in Henderson, he was a member of 7 golf courses, and all of them were way up the ladder. And, of course, I always thought that would be great to be able to play some of the ones that he plays. But I don't really, other than Pebble Beach, Augusta, I've been there 2 or 3 times. I think they've ruined Augusta. I don't like what they've done to it. Augusta, the golf course itself, is not what's hard. What's hard at Augusta is the greens, mm-hmm. and the shots to the green. And I don't see any need of making it longer and making it. They're killing the guy that's a good player that hits it 260, 270, 280. There's no quality of being able to hit the shots. You know, back in the old day, you would hit a hook in or a fade in or whatever. Pretty much today, it's just hit it 350 yards and hit a 9-iron.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think I liked it better when it was the other way. Augusta, and I've been there 3 or 4 times, there's no reason to have any rough at Augusta, and no reason to have it 9,000 yards long. Mm-hmm. That don't make any difference. You remember the shot this year that McIlroy hit on 13 to par 5. I believe it's 13 to par 5. He's been pulling that shot, so he's aiming to the right of the pin a little bit, allowing for the pull. Well, he doesn't pull it. His ball hits halfway between the hole and the ditch. Where does it go?
In the ditch.
Because of the roll of the green, it had to spin, and it rolls in the ditch. Well, that's what makes Augusta so hard. Not the length, because all of them hit it 9 miles.
Mm-hmm.
It's being in the right place. 13, you hit it over the green on the left-hand side. I mean, that's about impossible. 12? 11? 11, they've lengthened that hole about 75 yards. But that's not what makes it hard. That lake on the left is what makes it hard.
Jim, we've talked a little bit about Arnold and Jack and some of the great golfers of the past. Are there any of the golfers today that you especially enjoy watching? Any of the players who are out there today that you like the way they approach the game?
Well, I reckon you would have to say Schauffler. He's probably the most interesting person to play. I mean, right at this point in time. Mm-hmm. If he was as good a putter as Tiger Woods was, or Nicklaus was, he'd win every week. Mm-hmm. He hits it so straight, and his distance control is great. I don't know that he's a great chipper, but he's made some good chip shots.
Mm-hmm.
One he chipped in a few weeks ago, and some others that I've seen him do. He just doesn't get in any trouble. I'd like to be able to sit down one day and listen to what he has to say about golf, about playing the game, and what he thinks about. We'll have to see whether he hangs in there for a long period of time. But after his year last year, everybody says, well, he's through. Then he comes back this year and having a pretty good year.
Absolutely.
I think McIlroy is a really good player and hits the ball good, but he can't putt.
Right.
And the tour is a putting contest. If you putt good, you're going to win. The guy that wins the tournament most of every week is the guy that putted the best.
Jimmy, what's the best piece of advice, golf-wise, that you've ever been given?
Well, if you're talking about a stroke or a shot, this guy Ben Riley that I told you about earlier, I'd go in when I was little and I'd say, I got it now. That was my favorite expression. Mm-hmm. I got it now. So he would go to the back room and get a yardstick he'd get a yardstick and he'd get four golf balls and he'd take them out to the hole and he'd put 1, 2, 3, 4 and he'd put a dollar in the hole and he'd say, you make all four of those balls, you have that dollar. Well, I'd get down to the last ball and I'd miss that last ball and I'd say, Mr. Riley, give me another chance. He'd pick that ball, that dollar up out of that hole and get them four balls. I said, but wait a minute, I got it. Just give me another chance. And he'd go to the thing, hang his yardstick up, put the balls up, dollar back in his pocket and walk away. Well, I always, my bad putting, you know, back in my day, and if you look at the older players, they were all wrist putters.
Mm-hmm.
Because the greens were so slow, you just had to pop that ball, And my biggest fault was coming along is I always missed the ball to the left of the hole. Mm-hmm. And it's because I'd let that left wrist break mm-hmm. before it got to the ball and it shut the face down. And he was one that helped me with that a tremendous amount. And I tell people, generally speaking, I can look at somebody and tell you whether they're a good putter or not. If you watch a person putting, two things that happens is 90% of the time that ball comes off of the ground when they hit it because they've got their hands behind it and they hit it coming up. And that ball comes off the ground for the first 2 feet. Mm-hmm. I'm talking about on a relatively long putt.
Right.
But that ball comes off of the ground because they're hitting it. They're playing the ball too far forward and they break that wrist and that putter head swings past your hand. A putting stroke is just like hitting a ball off the fairway. When you hit a ball off the fairway, and the two things to hit the ball, I'm giving a lesson now.
Please do.
There's two things to hitting a golf ball. One is the direction that the club goes through the ball. And the next thing is whether that face is open or closed. That's it. There's nothing else. You go back and look at some of the greatest players in the olden times. You don't see it today because all the modern day players, they pretty much have perfect swings. But you look at some of them, they whip that club all the way around above their head and behind them and what. But when they come to that ball, that left hand is leading that club and that club is going in the ball is always going to start in the direction that you swing through that ball. People say, well, I'm slicing, I'm cutting. you can cut across it and still hook it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so the direction that the club goes through the ball and with that left hand leading that club head is what makes you a good ball striker. It's the same thing on putting, same thing on chipping. I don't care what you do, that left hand has got to pass that ball before that club head gets there, period. And then it's whether it's open or closed. And that's all there is to golf, period.
Finally, Jimmy, can you put into words how Campbell and the Buies Creek community have impacted your life?
Well, of course, when I went to Campbell, it was Buies Gulch.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it wasn't much there. We had, I think there was 900 students there. And somebody looked it up on the internet the other day, and they got 7,000 students now. Of course, they got a bunch in Raleigh and, you know, the law school. And I've got three or four people here. A lot of people from here to go to Campbell. A good friend of mine's daughter went to the pharmacy school.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, Campbell was just a really good place to go to school. My daughter went there for, I think, two years, maybe a semester and a half. She was going to be a teacher,
mm-hmm.
but she decided after being there she didn't want to be a teacher. So she transferred to Meredith in Raleigh, but she went there for a while. But Campbell's a great place to go. I tell people all the time, wasn't for them, I wouldn't be here.
I'm Stan Cole, and our guest today on Tales from the Creek has been Campbell Hall of Fame member and All-America golfer Jimmy Gerken. Thank you, Jimmy, for sharing your Tales from the Creek.
Well, this has been great. I like to talk. I got my family's always been the story family. We always tell stories, and this has been great. I've enjoyed it.